You are listening to The Voice of Russia. In Washington, D.C., I'm Carmen Russell-Sluchansky, and for the next hour, we will be talking to an international panel about the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center. There are currently 106 detainees at the center who are engaging in a hunger strike to protest their conditions there. 45 of them are being force-fed, which has added to the accusation that the center epitomizes human rights violations. Meanwhile, the government recently released a list of 46 prisoners they have dubbed indefinite detainees, adding to calls for the center to stay open in the interest of national security. Like I said, we have an international panel, and here in Washington, I have J.D. Gordon. He's the executive director of Protect America Today. He's also a retired naval commander who served under Defense Secretaries Rumsfeld and Gates. And in London, we have Keith Best. He is CEO of Freedom from Torture. And in Moscow, we have Haider Jamal. He's the chairman of the Islamic Committee in Russia. I'm going to go ahead and start the conversation with J.D., since he's right here to begin with. J.D., obviously, you know, it's been years that the center has been open, and we have heard a lot of criticism of the center. I'm sure you're familiar with all of it, the human rights violations, the fact that so many of them are there without having been tried. We now see, you know, there's the solitary, long terms of solitary confinement and so on. Now, when you consider that 80, I think it's about 86 detainees who have already been essentially cleared for release but have nowhere to go, or at least they're not being released, I should say. You know, is our national interest for security really so overwhelmingly strong that it allows for these different human rights violations to continue, what some people would say on a regular basis, on a daily basis even?
Well, Carmen, thanks so much for having me on the show today. I really appreciate the chance to come and talk about Guantanamo. To give you a little bit of context about my background, I was the spokesman for the Pentagon for Secretary Rumsfeld and Secretary Gates for 4 years, from 2005 to 2009, for the Western Hemisphere. So as part of that, since Guantanamo's in the Western Hemisphere, I ended up spending about 80% of my time working on Guantanamo for 4 years. And in that time, I've been to Guantanamo over 30 times. And I've been to most of the major military commission hearings. I brought about 500 press there from 40 countries, diplomats, you name it. So I bring a lot to the table when it comes to actual experience in Guantanamo. And so one thing I would push back on immediately is the notion that it's some sort of human rights violation to keep detainees at Guantanamo. The fact of the matter is Guantanamo has kept the United States safe from further terrorist attacks like the type we had on 9/11. We have people who have collectively killed thousands around the world. We have the 9/11 plotters, the Bali bombers, the U.S. Cole bomber. We've got Taliban leadership, the deputy minister of the Taliban, deputy intel minister and defense minister there, who have collectively killed tens of thousands of ethnic Hazaris, Uzbeks, Tajiks in Afghanistan. The notion that it's been a human rights violation, I dispute, because we're at war, and I believe that Guantanamo is an appropriate place to keep enemy combatants, because if we just release them into the United States, a lot of judges could let them out. I spoke at the European Parliament last week in Porto. It's the European Parliament, EPP, European People's Party, which is the center-right party of the European Parliament. And I made the point there that if you did a comparison to some other countries, their international law, France wouldn't have Guantanamo, for instance, because France has a lot tougher terrorism laws. Our laws in the United States domestically are not really that tough on terrorism. So we have 166 detainees at Guantanamo. If you were able to move them into the United States, a lot of judges could just let them out because they don't have the sufficient amount of evidence that meet the standard in the United States. That's why it's a tough position for us. So unless we want to change the laws here in the United States, we have to keep Guantanamo open for right now.
Real quick, and then I'm going to kind of get a response from some of our other guests, from our other two guests here. 86 of them have apparently, you know, basically the government's admitted, like, we don't even have any reason to be holding them, yet we continue. Some people do argue, however, that having spent so much time in Guantanamo Bay has, if anything, you know, made them more, shall we say, hateful of the U.S. I mean, is there any, should we not just let these, what is more than half of the detainees that are currently there, let them go, just, you know, get them out of there? They don't belong there?
Well, first of all, almost a third of the detainees that have already been released, we're talking about 200 detainees, have already returned to terrorism. We're talking about people who have returned to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, who have killed coalition troops, killed people. These 86 people that have been cleared by the Obama administration, I say most of them shouldn't even have been cleared. Some people that have been on the board to clear them were former senior lawyers with Human Rights First, people that have tried to lobby for their release over the years. And so I think that when you're talking about the 86, you got to realize who these people are. We're talking about Osama bin Laden bodyguards. And if we think it's just a good idea to let them out to go kill people again, they could be the next suicide bomber in Times Square. I think that's a completely wrong approach. The other piece of it is some of these people have been cleared to go back to Yemen. In Yemen, it's notorious for prison breaks. So how are you going to make sure that the Yemenis don't let them out and they just don't get sprung by other Al-Qaeda members because security is so weak in Yemen? And the other piece is there are some legitimate human rights concerns. We had 22 Uyghurs there at Guantanamo who are ethnic Turkish-speaking people from the western part of China. It's sort of like a Tibet with an Islamic bent to it, basically. Mm-hmm. The Uyghurs would get executed if they went to China. Everybody knows that. Now, most of the Uyghurs have already been released to Palau, to Bermuda, but we still have a Uyghur there. And so if he's released, that's somebody that the Chinese would execute. And so there are some human rights concerns, too, about releasing them to countries where they would be tortured or executed.
Let's go to London. Keith Best, are you on the line?
Yes, indeed. Good afternoon.
Mr. Best?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Hi, Keith. Good day. We can hear you.
Good.
Keith, it's great to have you. First of all, let me ask you, can you kind of tick off what you see as the human rights violations that are occurring in your perspective at the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center?
Yes, well, thank you for having me on the program. I can have sympathy with Mr. Gordon's view if his country really does have insufficient terrorist laws against to combat terrorism, that they have to keep large numbers of people in indefinite detention. But I have to say, he may see this from a monocentric American point of view, I have to say around the world, that continued detention is doing a disproportionate amount of damage to America's reputation around the world and is in itself a real incitement for people to combat the United States. It's very sad to see that happen when the United States is capable of doing so much good around the world and yet ends up being seen as behaving like a tyrant state in keeping people in indefinite detention and not bringing them to trial. I mean, Mr. Gordon categorized a whole series of very serious allegations about the people being held there. Well, really, why aren't these people being prosecuted? How many have been prosecuted? We in the United Kingdom have understandings about prosecuting international offences, and these are international offences. They are extraterritorial. They can be prosecuted in almost any country, certainly those that sign up to the major conventions. That is indeed done if there is the evidence there. If there isn't the evidence there, then I'm afraid the rule of law indicates that you really can't just keep people in indefinite detention. That is the biggest abuse of human rights, frankly. I mean, we really do live in a tyranny if anybody can be plucked off the street and put into indefinite detention.
Keith, let me ask you, though, J.D., to bring up the fact that the nation is at war. I mean, there was a war that was declared on terror. Certainly, the same rules don't apply when you're at war. And also, there's the fact that it's a different type of war. I mean, the battlefields are around the world, and the country was hit at home by a very kind of opaque, indeterminate enemy.
Well, we understand that in the UK. We had our own terrorist outrage, as you may recall. And we also had a long conflict with the Irish Republican Army in Northern Ireland. Indeed, interestingly enough, there we did have hunger strikers who were allowed to die. There was a political risk associated with that, that there might be a backlash and some kind of sympathy, but it didn't happen. And that again is a respect for the fact that if people are held in detention, then they have the right to, for example, deny being force-fed or have the right to refuse food, just as anybody has the right to deny having medication forcibly applied to them. But, you know, the trouble with the war against terrorism is, as I think you've indicated, it's a novel concept. We've never had this before. We've had wars against countries. We've had wars against empires. We've had wars against more defined objectives than a concept, which is terrorism. It does mean that you have to be extra vigilant in order to ensure that you're not picking up people against whom there is very little evidence, or it's hearsay, or it's not evidence that would stand up in a court of law, before you actually apply those more lax rules than you would in an ordinary, what I might call an ordinary conflict situation.
Let's go to Moscow, where we have Haider Jamal, and once again, he's the chairman of the Islamic Committee of Russia. Haider, one of the issues, one of the concerns that even JD had talked about was recidivism. Now, apparently, there were two Russian nationals who were captured in Afghanistan in December of 2001. They were released a few years later. They were arrested only another year after that. So they were released in 2004. They were arrested in August of 2005 by Russian authorities.
Yes.
They were arrested in Moscow for allegedly preparing a series of attacks in Russia. Does this not give a lot of credence to JD's argument?
It so happens that I know personally several persons from the released prisoners that were released by the Americans, Russian nationals who came here in 2005, I think, and I helped some of them even to organize the press conference about their being detained in Guantanamo. So I know about their fate after being released, and you know, the situation was absolutely unjust to them. So the authorities were absolutely biased about them, and they did everything in their possibilities to stop, to prevent them from resuming the normal course of life. So speaking of Guantanamo, I think that it is a black spot, one of the greatest black spots upon the image of the United States. And the problem is that the Guantanamo is not the only secret prison of the United States. So we know that there are about 50 of them, where there are about 35,000 prisoners there, inmates there, captured without possibility to be judged and to be defended. So I think that it is a kidnapping in its purest public form. Kidnapping is the federal offense, so I think that that is the crime in itself. But not a singular phenomenon, because it is a projection of the prison culture of the United States. Now we have the hunger strike that is going on in Pelican Bay Prison in California. About 30,000 prisoners there keep hunger strike, protesting against tortures and protesting against the impossible conditions of detainment. So we may say that it is the projection of the prison culture, the inhuman spirit prevails in the detention places of the United States.
Haider, based on what you were saying earlier, I took away from it was that you're feeling that that Guantanamo Bay and how the prisoners are treated there is actually creating enemies abroad.
Well, I think that it doesn't help. It doesn't help to ameliorate the image of the United States, to heighten the respect that the United States would prefer to inspire to the other peoples around the world. So I think that instead of the goals they are trying to achieve, they do everything by its policy to create the new waves of resistance and terrorism. I think it's counterproductive.
JD, let me ask you, you know, both of our other guests have talked about the international reputation of the U.S. The U.S. has had a long-standing reputation of working to export American-style democracy. This includes things like habeas corpus, you know, protecting human rights. Now, obviously, there are people who make the argument that even though that the United States espouses those ideals, they don't always live up to them. And maybe Guantanamo Bay is a really good example of exactly that. Is, you know, does this not circumvent the effort by the United States to export those ideals? And does international reputation, and not, is that not important, the way other nations see us?
Sure, Carmen, it's important, and I appreciate hearing the feedback from the other two guests. A lot of times in the United States, we take a look at an example. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Well, in Guantanamo's case, it's clear. 9/11, 3,000 people killed here in Washington and New York in a field in Pennsylvania. That came before Guantanamo. So there was still a lot of angst and a lot of hate against the United States from radical Islam. We have to identify it. A lot of people in the United States still don't even identify what the threat is. The Obama administration still doesn't identify what the threat is most of the time. So I think we have a real problem. What we're doing is we're fighting a 21st century war where we have these non-state actors that are very lethal, and we're using a 20th century mentality to fight it. And there's been a massive propaganda campaign against the United States. I'd call it the mother of all propaganda campaigns. And Guantanamo has been the most disingenuous campaign, smear campaign against the United States that I think we've ever seen.
But we're making some of the arguments for them, aren't we? I mean, by, you know, this indefinite detention, solitary confinement, waterboarding in the past and so on. I mean, aren't we giving them the propaganda on a silver platter?
Well, first of all, waterboarding was never done at Guantanamo. Waterboarding only happened to three detainees, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two other key leaders from al-Qaeda, and not at Guantanamo, by the way. And see, that's a big confusion. Groups like Amnesty International, I think, really harm themselves a lot because they compared Guantanamo to the Gulag, basically. They said it's the Gulag of our times. And not to relive Russian history, but about a million people died in the Gulag. And they were Soviet dissidents. They were political protesters, essentially. And a million of them died. How could you compare 779 people who are Islamic terrorists, the great majority of them, about 5% weren't, and they were let go a long time ago. How could you compare 779 people when we're at war, keeping them off the battlefield, with a million people that died in the Gulag who were political prisoners? So groups like Amnesty International really harmed their credibility a lot over Guantanamo. So many false things were said about it. That's why it has the reputation it does. But getting back to Mr. Best's point, you know, he is he does make a legitimate point about indefinite detention and how it's perceived very negatively around the world. And, you know, being a spokesman in the Bush administration, I agree that there could have been a better job, a much better job made for Guantanamo publicly. President Bush could have really taken this to the American public and say why we're going to have this indefinite detention. He very rarely did that. So I think we should have done a much better job while I was in the government. And as far as the Obama administration goes, they want to close Guantanamo. They were part of the problem when he was a senator in casting negative light on Guantanamo and going overboard and talking about the criticisms of it. So President Obama was actually part of the problem. And he hasn't solved it now because he's kept it open. He wants to make no public defense of it. And so it's even worse now than it was.
I actually want to real quick go to Moscow for a second because I want to ask Haider about this comparison to, let's say, the Gulag or, you know, other even, you know, you could probably pick a number of prisons of detention centers around the world that have been used at various times in history during war or otherwise. JD's, if you would speak to JD's point about how, you know, Guantanamo, really not that bad.
Well, you know, we just cannot compare Guantanamo and the like secret prisons to Gulag, because Gulag was never a secret prison with the indefinite detention. It was absolutely inhuman, but it was built according to certain rules. And what is called the war on terror in the United States is built upon lies, because now mentioning the 9/11, it is not even a mainstream, even in the terms of officialdom, because there is the 9/11 truth movement that made very suspect all the lies, all the information that was had been told by the government now, and it is absolutely undefendable now. So after Cheney had shown the clear water, telling that it was the chemical weapon created by Saddam in the United States, and it was a clear water as that had been torn as it had turned later. Yes, after that, you know, all the promises of Obama to shut down the secret prison, the Guantanamo prison, were turned out to be lies. It is absolutely undefendable. Tell anything you want, but the public opinion around the world cannot be swayed anymore in the to be biased by the United States and the in the use of the United States.
Can Keith, I'd like you to actually respond to that.
Thank you very much, if I may. I agree entirely with Commander Gordon that we must resist hyperbole and drawing analogies which just don't fit at all. I don't think that's helpful. I think we need to look at Guantanamo Bay as an institution in itself and what is going on there as best we know. We still come back to this point that there are human beings who are being detained without trial, who are accused of heinous offences, but for the rest of the world, and indeed for the American public, they don't know whether they're guilty of them or not, because they're not being subjected to due process of law. And, you know, it may be presumptuous of me as a non-American making that kind of thing. I don't suggest that people judge it by what I say. I say go back to the founding fathers of the United States and the clear understanding they had about the need to preserve civil liberties. You mentioned habeas corpus yourself. It's a very long-standing principle that no state has the right merely to lock people up and throw away the key without actually demonstrating whether they are guilty according to law or not. Indeed, we had a civil war in our country about that issue.
Sure. One might argue the founding fathers didn't have to deal with Al-Qaeda. They weren't dealing with an international, a loose-knit terrorist organization.
No, but
that
the principles, the principles were solid. And you know, at the end of the day, every state has to stand on its principles and what it believes in. Now, some of those may be secular, some of them may have foundations in religion or whatever, but they are principles which guide a country, particularly in times of fear or in times of threat, and those principles are abiding, and you have to apply them to the issues that come up. Of course, the founding fathers couldn't contemplate the idea of nuclear war or anything like that. It didn't exist. But what they can and did do, I think quite effectively, is to understand the basis of a cohesive society in which anybody in a position of power, however they achieve that power, cannot just take somebody they don't like and put them into incarceration and throw away the key and say, well, it's okay because it's what I said to do. I mean, I'm resist hyperbole, but we've seen regimes in the past, in the last century, who decided that might was right and applied it accordingly, and it was appalling.
Keith, we just have a minute left before we go to a break. So if you could respond to this in about 30 seconds. What about the force feeding? The government's between a rock and a hard place. Is the force feeding a human rights violation? Is that torture? Or, I mean, should the administration just be letting them die?
Well, if you look at the Convention Against Torture and see the definition, it comes pretty close to it. It's the application of mental or physical force for purposes of punishment or whatever. But again, don't rely on me. Look at what the World Medical Association has said. They specifically prohibit force feeding in the declarations of Tokyo and Malta. So, these are things which have a degree of universality about the condemnation of it being prohibited.
All right, Keith, we have to go to a break, but we're going to come back to that very thought. We're going to come back to that very thought because I do want to talk about that a little bit more. Once again, in studio, I have J.D. Gordon, and in London, we have Keith Best, and in Moscow, we have Haider Jamal. You're listening to The Voice of Russia. I'm Carmen Russell-Sluchansky. We'll be back in just a couple minutes after this short break.
For the American edition on The Voice of Russia, I'm Kim Brown with a look at your international headlines. Bosnia will bury 409 victims of the Srebrenica massacre today, marking the 18th anniversary of Europe's worst post-war tragedy. Srebrenica was a UN protective Muslim enclave until July of 1995 when it was overrun by Bosnian Serb forces. Back then, the forces commanded by wartime leader Radovan Karadzic slaughtered some 8,000 Muslims. After escaping justice for years, Karadzic is now being tried by the International Court of Justice for war crimes and genocide. The Srebrenica massacre has been judged an act of genocide by the International Court of Justice. A court in Myanmar has sentenced the suspects of a massacre at an Islamic boarding school to 15 years in jail. The seven Buddhist men were convicted of killing dozens of students and teachers at the Islamic boarding school in the city of Mictala on March 21st. According to the Associated Press, Myanmar has faced significant sectarian violence in the past year, with at least 250 people killed. Taiwan evacuated more than 2,000 tourists today as the island prepares for a severe typhoon. The typhoon Solik moves towards Taiwan shores at the speed of 12 miles per hour, with the wind gusts reaching 140 miles per hour. It is expected to make landfall in the north of the island sometime between Friday night and Saturday morning. Meanwhile, Japan's Okinawa Weather Service warned residents of the giant waves of up to 40 feet that could hit the country's shores. Chinese officials reported today that heavy rain across China has left at least 28 people dead and 66 missing. The storms, which began on Sunday, have affected more than 3 million people. Almost 110,000 residents of the Sichuan province have been relocated because of the storm.
Once again, you are listening to The Voice of Russia in Washington. I'm Carmen Russell-Sluchansky, and we are in the middle of our international panel on the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center, which, of course, as everybody knows, a detention center in Cuba, on U.S. territory, however, there at Guantanamo Bay, that currently houses 166 prisoners, many of them there for up to 10 years. 86 of them had been cleared for release by the Obama administration, however, are still there. They are still not been able to get out, and at the same time, currently about 45 of them are being force-fed. 106 are on a hunger strike. 45 of them are being force-fed. I have in studio J.D. Gordon. He's executive director of Protect America Today. He's a retired naval commander who served under Defense Secretaries Rumsfeld and Gates. In London, we have Keith Best. He is CEO of Freedom from Torture. And in Moscow, we have Haider Jamal. He is chairman of the Islamic Committee of Russia. I want to talk a little bit more about the force-feeding component of this. This is obviously has only really kind of come about in the last couple of months. Vivian Nathanson is the head of sciences and ethics at the British Medical Association, and I'm going to read a quote something she had written for The Guardian. She wrote, "Force feeding of competent adults who are involved in a voluntary hunger strike violates international standards of medical ethics, as set out in the World Medical Association's Declaration of Malta." We earlier heard Keith refer to this as well. JD, I've heard heard of detainees describing it as intensely painful. This is a painful process. How, and also, let me point out that the you know, we haven't, it's been generally been frowned upon by the world community for decades now. I think since, you know, a couple of IRA, the, you know, members of the Irish Republican Army had actually died from being force-fed. It induces vomiting and so on. How is this acceptable, really, for the U.S., again, you know, the paragon of human rights, you know, to be performing this?
Well, thanks for asking that, Carmen. I was down at Guantanamo for the force feeding for the voluntary fast. They are not new. They've been going on for quite some time. Now it's a spike because a lot of the detainees have gotten together with their lawyers as part of this information campaign against the United States. It's really part of asymmetric warfare. It's a battle of ideas. And there was a video that was just launched by Mos Def, who's a rapper and an actor. I watched it. It was done by Reprieve in London, which is an NGO trying to get detainees out of there. And the video was patently false. The tube was twice as big as it is in real life. The lubricant was this sticky-looking Vaseline substance when that's not what it is. It's actually olive oil. Most of it said it burned. It doesn't burn because I've actually seen it done. So what we see is a continuous propaganda campaign, lies about what it actually is that they're doing at Guantanamo, not what Most Def and Reprieve and Andy Worthington are trying to say it is, that they're actually deceiving the public about it. What's really happening is we're preserving life because we don't want Mohammed Sands, if you will. We had Bobby Sands in Northern Ireland. Everybody knows who he is. He's famous because he died. Mm-hmm. We don't want a zero to go to a hero because they're zeros at Guantanamo. These are terrorists that want to destroy this country, but they want to get public sympathy so they can get out. One last point to mention, and then you could turn it over to the other guests if you'd like, is the Manchester Manual. That is Al-Qaeda's training document. Chapter 18 says, prove or try to insist that torture is being done while in detention in order to secure your release. This whole force feeding issue and the restraint chair issue, which is the same procedure we use, by the way, in the Bureau of Prisons and mental hospitals around the U.S. to preserve life, they're just using it as an asymmetric warfare tool designed to pressure their release, and that's all it is.
So the detainees are effectively lying when they say it hurts.
I don't think it's very comfortable. But I would dispute the pain. The pain that Mos Def displayed in it, he should get a best actor in a terrorist propaganda video. If there was an award for that, Mos Def would get it. Because if you watch his video, it looks very painful. But it's not as painful as it looks. It's not comfortable because the tube goes through the nose into the stomach. That can't be comfortable for anybody. And there's a restraint chair because the detainees would fight the medical folks doing the procedure. And I know it's controversial, but I would rather have them live with a minimum amount of pain. And oh, by the way, it is Ramadan, but so they're fed at night.
Right.
So to make sure that's clear. But it's not that painful. It's not comfortable, but it's not to the degree that the detainees and their lawyers are saying, because they're way overboard with hyperbole as usual.
Keith, you know, you referred to, I think you referred to the AMA, or maybe it was the World Medical Association.
Yes.
And their perspective on this. So your response?
Well, you mentioned the AMA, the American Medical Association. It is a signatory to the Tokyo and Malta declarations, to which both Vivian Nathanson and I referred, coming from the World Medical Association. I should stress for your listeners, because they may not know what my organisation, Freedom from Torture, does. We're principally a clinical care organisation. We provide clinical care and rehabilitation for torture survivors who come to the United Kingdom from all over the world seeking protection, but obviously deeply traumatised as a result of the mental and physical scarring that they've received as a result of torture. We do use that medical evidence to exemplify the problems that are there, but we're not principally a campaigning organisation. We're there to provide clinical care. So I am able to rely on a very large body of medical evidence that actually comes from my own organisation. Whether we can argue about the size of the tube and whether it's painful, pleasurable, or somewhere between the two is really a side issue. I mean, these people are restrained. It's clearly contrary to their will. They have to have their head held, as I understand it. I was not part of that video. video to which Commander Gordon referred. We do work sometimes with Reprieve, but we're not part of Reprieve in any way. That's a separate NGO. But we really have to look at what are the medical ethics here, and the medical ethics are that it is wrong. And I mentioned earlier, and indeed Commander Gordon mentioned Bobby Sands, one of the IRA, the Irish Republican Army protesters, who literally 11 of them starved themselves to death. There was a serious problem there about whether those people should have their lives preserved against their will or not. But Britain, abiding by those principles of the fact that people have the right to refuse medication, they have the right to refuse food and water, allowed those people to die. It was a very sad time. It was politically a very tendentious and dangerous time because, as I mentioned earlier, there could have been a backlash. There could have been the kind of sympathy that Commander Gordon was talking about these people becoming heroes. Well, in fact, actually, that it's a very, if they do become heroes as a result of doing that, they're heroes only in the eyes of their own supporters, and it's a very short-lived heroism as well. It doesn't last for very long. It's far more important to abide by international standards and medical ethics than it is to worry about that.
Very good. I appreciate that. We just have a few minutes left, so I do want to hear from Haider. Haider, JD had said one of the reasons that they were, force feeding is because they don't want any more martyrs. However, I also have to imagine, I mean, there is at least some sense of we just don't want people, to die. A number of these, obviously the vast majority, maybe everybody there in Guantanamo Bay is of the Muslim faith. They are being careful of that by not force feeding them during the day, during Ramadan. But I have to imagine you don't necessarily want to see these people starve to death either, right?
Well, first, I would mention that the problem of force feeding is terribly similar to the problem of force feeding in the Soviet prisons several years ago, some 20 to 30 years ago. And the arguments of butchers, the arguments of prison officers are very much the like, very much the same. And in the end, it somehow appears that the prisoners should be even grateful for the fact of being force-fed and being stayed forcefully kept in life. So it's all examples of outrageous hypocrisy. And the very spirit of the system based upon torture and the double standard. Because, force feeding is not the only torture that is used in Guantanamo and the like places. There are also religious insults, like, for example, throwing of sacred texts in the human feces, and for example, physical pain caused by electric cattle prods and torture chairs and the like things that are generally a product of as I told previously, the product of the U.S. Prison culture. It is used also in the usual American prisons against the usual detainees, and it is what makes now thousands of people protest, the detainees and their relatives alike. So I see the problem as a whole, not just as a single point of Guantanamo, because Guantanamo is a spotlight that maybe makes us to forget that there are also some other secret places, and that there is the system of violence that
we're gonna actually have to end it there, Haider. But your point was very well made. I do appreciate it. I want to thank my panelists. We had J.D. Gordon. He's executive director of Protect America Today here in the Washington Bureau. He's a retired naval commander who served under Secretaries of Defense Rumsfeld and Gates. We also had in London Keith Bess. He's CEO of Freedom from Torture. And in Moscow, Haider Jamal. He's chairman of the Islamic Committee of Russia. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was absolutely my pleasure. And once again, you are listening to the Voice of Russia in Washington. I'm Carmen Russell-Sluchansky. Thank you for listening.